Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And so it begins.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Know-It-All.
John, I love your show.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. In a couple of minutes here, we'll pick up the phone line with Jane Kirtley, a professor of media ethics, and again, another frequent guest of my show, both on Saturdays, the show I do and have done in the past in Minnesota, and here on WGN Radio during the weekdays, too. She's just terrific. And when there's a question about something somebody says, a high-profile person, what does the law say about that? What is the ethic of that? When it comes to media matters, she's really, really good. We caught up with her. I've got a few Sean Spicer quotes for her today. I mean, yesterday, Sean Spicer's show at the White House press briefing room was really remarkable in some ways. Not unusual anymore, but it's just so interesting to see him sort of banter with the press corps. Here's a question that was put to him by Peter Alexander of NBC News. He asked, can you say, imagine this is a question from the American media to the spokesperson for the sitting president of the United States, quote, can you say affirmatively that whenever the president says something, we can trust it to be real? And Spicer said with a chuckle, if he's not joking, of course. Alexander said, when he says something, can we trust that it's real or should we assume that it's phony? And he wasn't pulling his leg. Spicer said that it's real when the president is saying something, verbally or on Twitter. They then brought up the unemployment numbers that Barack Obama had in the past, that George Bush have had in the past. And Alexander said, you said they may have been phony, those unemployment numbers in the past, but it's very real now. How can we believe that it's real when you just told us that it's phony then, but now it's real? How can we trust anything he says that he won't later say, actually, it was the opposite? And then Spicer had to deal with that. And you can tell the tone of the media in the headlines online and in print as well. Here's CNN's headline from yesterday. Spicer, Trump didn't mean wiretapping when he tweeted about wiretapping. Now, that's funny, but that's a very contentious kind of reporting of the news. I'll say it shows a bias. Now, you may say that bias is toward the truth, but I think the bias, even if that's the case, is towards contention. There's a better way to tell that story in a headline than that. Some of the audio from that Sean Spicer piece is best put to music while doing the cha-cha.
Wiretapping, that spans a whole host of surveillance types of options. He doesn't really think that President Obama went up and tapped his phone personally, I think. But there's no question that the Obama administration, that there were actions about surveillance and other activities that occurred in the 2016 election. The president used the word wiretap in quotes to mean broadly surveillance and other activities during that.
So there you have it. He didn't mean wiretapping when he tweeted wiretapping. And if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Didn't his second tweet say phones tapped? I thought that...
the word phones tapped were used too.
So he's using the first tweet to say in general, but then the second tweet, I think, said phones.
Well, but I think Spicer's get-out-of-jail card is that he put wiretapping in quotes, which he does a lot. Grammatically incorrectly, that's a quibble.
But he didn't phones, that's what I'm saying. I'll see if I can find it, but I think, remember it came in two tweets.
Yeah, oh sure, but there were four actually that was in that package.
And if the first one was quote-unquote wiretaps, the second one was not quote-unquote phones.
Isn't this ridiculous, though? It's sort of like we're interpreting the language of somebody who doesn't speak English. Like if the Chinese ambassador was saying this, this would be an interesting, a legitimate conversation. This is the president speaking in English to us, but always parsing his words in a way, Lord, he's crafty, that if they want to make it mean the exact opposite, they can do so right to your face. So Jane Kirtley, the professor of media ethics from the Scylla Center, joins us. Hi, Jane.
Hi, John.
What do you want to say about this conversation, Jane Kirtley?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm in the school of saying we got to laugh at this. You know, on one level, it is terribly disturbing that the spokesman for the president is essentially saying you can believe him except when you can't because he's joking, but you've got to figure out when he's joking. I mean, this is just through the looking glass territory. But I think it's reaching the point now where, you know, we need to be laughing at this, if only to show that we're not being deceived by this, because this is, in my view, a deflection. It's an attempt to divert attention from things that the president would like us not to be thinking about right now. I don't consider that good statescraft. I think it's a con, and I think it needs to be called for that. I just don't buy this idea that, oh, the president is tweeting with air quotes and you shouldn't take him literally. I'm tired of hearing that we should not be taking him literally. He is the president of the United States, and I think we have to take seriously what he says, and I resent the fact that his spokespeople, Mr. Spicer and Kellyanne Conway, are basically trying to deflect and say what you think you just heard yesterday or last week, well, you didn't really hear it because what he really meant was X. I'm sorry, this is nonsense.
It's kind of, I wonder if I go back and forth between thinking Sean Spicer's really good at his job and really terrible at his job. But I mean, what a difficult task to go out there, and when the president tweets wiretapping, you have to then find the words to convince the most sophisticated media apparatus in the world that he didn't mean exactly those words that he used. That's not an easy job.
Right. This is not a case where you can say he misspoke or he's being misquoted. The tweet is there. Nobody denies the tweet. This is all about what kind of spin you're going to put on it. And, you know, frankly, on some level, I feel very sorry for Sean Spicer, because this must be an incredibly stressful and difficult job. On the other hand, he knew the job was dangerous when he took it, as they say. And I hope he can live with himself. It's certainly true that the people that are spokespersons for powerful people often have to walk back what whoever their principal is says. But this is not something that happens once a month or once a week. It's happening every single day. So it must be incredibly challenging to try to come up with these new spins on the perfectly clear statements that the president has made.
But you say it's a con, and I had this conversation with some friends recently. I'm not sure that every time they say something that's hard to understand that it's a con, that they're deflecting. I think sometimes they're just sloppy. I mean, clearly nobody's controlling the president's tweets, and he has typos and grammatical errors in them. In fact, on the White House site, when they were promoting the new health care plan yesterday, they misspelled White House.
And I get that, and I'm really not holding the president to perfect standards of syntax and grammatical accuracy and spelling when he's tweeting. But I think the point is, and I'm certainly not the first person to have made this point, at some stage, I think the president has to recognize that he is the president of the United States. And this kind of spontaneous tweeting that he's just doing at impulse has consequences.
Here's the tweet that Steve Bertrand, my newsman, was talking about. There were several of them, but the one I have in front of me now says, how low has President Obama gone to tap, this is the famous misspelling of tap, how low has President Obama gone to tap my phones during the very sacred election process? He didn't put tap in quotes there, Steve. He didn't say tap my phones in quotes. He said Obama gone to tap my phones during the election process. And then he likened it to Nixon and Watergate.
Exactly. And their spin on it now is, well, of course, we didn't mean that the president literally went up and put the tap on the phone. I mean, this is nonsensical. He is accusing his predecessor of having conducted what I think most people would presume to be an illegal surveillance of a candidate for presidency. That is a serious accusation. And I just don't think there's any room for leeway in trying to say that it's something other than that. If he doesn't have any evidence for it, he shouldn't have made it. And he's essentially telling, you know, the Intelligence Committee that it's up to them to find the evidence for something that he could actually probably just ask the FBI about and get an answer.
Well, you know, it's also happening, and it's happening in slow motion, but it's happening. Now, the investigation of the Obama tap of Trump phones is part of the conversation. It's the same conversation we're having about investigating the Russians hacking into, say, the DNC or the RNC before the election. That's a legitimate investigation. Everybody that knows about that says that happened. We can all worry or wonder about the consequence, but that happened. But there's no evidence that Barack Obama tapped Donald Trump. And yet, we've sort of conflated those two conversations. They're being addressed in the same breath now.
They are. And again, to me, this is more than deflection. It is, I'm going to say it flat out, this is a disinformation campaign. It is an attempt to not just deflect attention, but to make accusations without any evidence or any proof. I mean, the president hasn't offered any, so I have to assume he does not have any. And I'm sorry, this is the kind of thing that societies that do not have a free press routinely engage in. It is a classic way to turn the president into the victim now. The idea is, if there was anything funny going on, hey, I was a victim of it too. And I'm sorry, I don't think that's acceptable, and I hope that Congress and the press will continue to press him on this, because I don't think we can allow this to go on. I don't think our elected president should be allowed to make these kinds of unsupportable statements that, frankly, undermine many of the institutions in our democracy.
I think you're characterizing him as a victim is very interesting. I see that happening, too. And he then stuck up yesterday for Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway, saying the media is being rude to them and that they'd be better off if they were a little nicer. The media needs to be nicer. These poor, poor people. And I think a lot of people are hearing that and buying into it.
And it is astonishing to me, given that during the years of President Obama's administration, they were urging further attacks and further holding their feet to the fire. And, you know, I'm good with that. I don't care who's in office. The president and his surrogates are subject to examination by the press and by the public. And I'm not talking about being gratuitously rude, but this notion that you have to be nice and polite, especially with this administration that labels the people it regards as enemy in the vilest terms. I don't get this double standard that the press is supposed to be nice and deferential and polite, and yet Trump and his surrogates can say whatever they want about anybody. This is just not crazy. You know, I'm speechless every day because there's some new thing coming on that hasn't been part of our political discourse in a very long time.
Well, speaking of things we've never talked about before, let me just take Kathy here before I let you go, Jane. I know you're at an airport and you're busy, but I have this call from Kathy. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Kathy.
Unlike your other caller, I'm certainly not speechless. Okay, I was just wondering. You might have seen Kellyanne Conway when she said it's just not phones you can tap, or TVs, and microwaves that turn into cameras. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but I like to be the first in my neighborhood to get one. Where do you get those?
Where do you get those? Yeah, I think they sell them at, I think you can get them at Target now.
I didn't know. Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
But it's the Target in Langley, Virginia.
She, you know, here again, though, that's Kellyanne is the master of this. You just, it's sort of like the Bowling Green Massacre. She speaks so quickly and breathlessly that you almost have trouble even catching up with what she's saying. And so in this sort of very quickly strung together series of sentences when she was answering a question, she threw that in there. And they didn't even pause to say, wait, excuse me, what did you just say? But that's the way that works. Jane Kirtley is with the Silla Center at the University of Minnesota, professor of media ethics there and a guest here. Jane, thanks for your time. We appreciate you joining us today. It's 2:22. This is WGN.